Welcome back, everybody, to the Business of Sport. My name is Ahmed Al-Houli, and as we do every single week, myself and my co-host, Mr. Rob Biel, we break down the latest from the world of the business of sport. Rob, how are you, buddy? How's things?
Good, my friend. How are you doing?
Pushing through. Big week in sport. You know, as we do every week, we love to focus on the stuff off the field. And our friends once again have come through with a huge surprise. The Saudis have struck again. Saudi Arabia, $100 million into the PFL. The PFL right now signed Jake Paul, signed Francis Ngannou, has arguably the two best female fighters in the world. One of them being Kayla Harrison. So I'm going to go back a bit. A few press conferences ago, Dana White press conferences ago, he mentioned that the PFL was raising $200 million or so. And he goes, who the hell would give him that? You know? And then fast forward a few weeks, our friends from the desert have come around and thrown $100 million at the PFL. What are your thoughts, my man? This is absolute madness.
Well, if I recall correctly, we've kind of predicted that they weren't done making investments in sport. And, you know, clearly UFC wasn't a place for them to play, because obviously UFC does a bunch of business in Dubai and Abu Dhabi currently. And, you know, the PFL, was making their aggressive move into Africa. And I think that, you know, with Ngannou, there's a natural, interest in what they did in marketing in Africa with the African Premier League, you know, their investment there. So, you know, again, they are going to take the PFL, which is, you know, the Avis to Hertz in the MMA fighting world. And they're going to give them some jet fuel, literally, as a partner, as an investor. But now the PFL is going to be, you know, having fights in Riyadh and the Middle East. And, oh, by the way, the purses are going to grow. Oh, by the way, are we going to see Aramco and Valvoline and some of the other brands that, Middle Eastern Saudi-owned brands that we saw starting to show up in Formula One when they made their investment? And we think they're going to start showing up in golf now that as they finalize that investment and then move over to, you know, anything that they own and have a stake in, you start seeing their brands move in there and look. Wise move by, you know, the PFL to make that call, because at some level, maybe the Saudis were rebuffed by UFC. But again, it's good competition. I think having two very good, successful leagues, I still think Dana White's the king when it comes to running an MMA organization. But this is an opportunity for the PFL to step up its game. And that's certainly a partner that can help you step it up fairly quickly, given their resources.
So the current landscape in the world of MMA is this. You have the UFC that has partnerships with the Emirates, which is Dubai and Abu Dhabi. You have ONE Championship, which is the biggest fighting platform in Asia, who has a partnership with Qatar and is on Bein Sports, which goes out to 60 million homes in the Middle East. And now you have the PFL, who's just had the public investment fund invest in them. $100 million apparently is not the actual, they're saying it's minimum $100 million. So what's going to happen now is the PFL has exposure to the largest population in the Gulf region, which is Saudi Arabia, has over 35 million people that live there. If you compare it to all the other nations that are in the Gulf, is like it's four or five times their actual population. The other thing it has is they're probably the richest country in the world, probably, because they have trillions of dollars, and they have some of the most amazing sand, soil, earth.
How many hours of pumping is that $100 million investment?
10 minutes. 10 minutes, I reckon. Five to 10 minutes minimum.
Yeah.
Maximum, sorry. So this is a huge move. And one of the points was that this money is going to be used to add a league called the Super Fight League. Sorry, add a division called the Super Fight Division, which is going to enable them to attract these big fights between boxing and MMA and bring on these other stars from the sport of MMA into the PFL. So this is what we have here now. We have this combination of boxing, MMA, and all these other sports that now will have a ton of money behind them to bring these fights that we've always dreamt about.
Well, yeah, smart play to be able to get in involved with PFL to create this new fighting league, and more importantly, at the end of the day, as sports fans, we want to see the best fight the best. I don't want to see circus shows. I do want to see Tyson Fury fight Ngannou, but I'd rather see that on a stage that isn't boxing driven, or I'd rather see it driven by a much more maybe independent. I think the collective good there is let's create the fights people want to see, but let's not do it in markets where we know that there's three judges that are voting for the boxer, so to speak. Exactly. I want to see them duke it out.
And just to add fuel to fire, one championship founder, currently his name is pretty hard to actually pronounce. One, he said that from the middle of the year onwards, one championship is going to quadruple their fight nights in the US. So now there's going to be this battleground of the US people trying to claim stake in the USA. And there's going to be a lot of money being pumped into MMA, because now they're all fighting for market share, because now the king is Dana White. And guess what Dana White's doing? Dana White continues to invest in his Dana White Contender Series. He continues to invest in his PR institutions around the world, and he continues to find the best talent. So what he's doing effectively is he's finding the best talent, he's growing it, and then once they're reaching, they're becoming champions. They built their profiles, they become champions. He's made a ton of money on them, cost him nothing. All those other guys are buying them at a
premium.
You gotta love it. You gotta absolutely love it. He's a master. He's just a master.
Yeah, the MMA space has now become a chessboard. One of the biggest movers and shakers in the sport, certainly in the past 18 months, is in. So here we go.
So let me ask you this. The Saudis have touched golf, touched tennis, touched the fight game. They've touched football. They haven't gone near baseball yet, and they haven't gone near America's biggest sport, NFL.
They did get involved in cricket, right? They're involved there. I mean, look, there's going to be lots of ways for them to find their way into that sport. The question is, does it happen here in the U.S. or do they look at that sport being played in other parts of the world that are, there's other professional football leagues in Europe that could be opportunities for them. Certainly we're watching the NFL send games over there into Germany, into the UK. There's talks about a European league at some point, potentially franchises over there. That may be something that the Saudis take a closer look at. But, you know, there's a league right now with 18 teams that's expanding to 20 next year that currently plays in Paris and plays in Germany and Spain and throughout Europe, Poland, Austria, et cetera. And there's, Italy. So if there's an opportunity for them to pounce on a league, that would be something that would be quite interesting to watch them get involved in that game in a market where they could be much more influential than I think they could ever be over here. So that would be something to kind of follow. But, they seem to be pretty shrewd when they make a decision, and they move pretty quickly. So who's to say that they're not laying in wait for an NFL franchise opportunity down the road, maybe to quietly fund or back a group in some way, shape, or form in the near future. But right now, there's no teams for sale. Allegedly, they were looking at the Commanders deal, or a group was, that had, Middle Eastern money behind it. But it never got to the table. But it'd be quite interesting for sure.
Mm. Okay, awesome. Let's keep going. Big week, big start, big debut. College football is back. Close to 40,000 people traveled to Ireland to support Notre Dame. Insane. Like when you think of that, the power of that brand is ridiculous. This sport is an absolute a haven for those that want to learn about fan engagement and sports marketing, because there's very rarely in the world do you see that close to 40,000 people going from country to country just to support a college football team. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what we're talking about. We're not talking about a professional franchise here that's worth billions. This is a college football team. Unbelievable. So,
well, Notre Dame in itself has always, been a global college brand. Given the Fighting Irish, they have considered themselves a small town university that's got global implications, given it's, certainly it's tied to the Catholic faith. It's embracing of the Irish culture, utilizing, the imagery of the leprechaun and the shamrock and all that goes with the Irish side. I mean, obviously we've seen, the Irish back, fighters like Conor McGregor in the past, and, how they claim U2 as their boys and all that kind of stuff. I mean, they're a very passionate bunch, and Notre Dame has done a great job of harvesting that, over the past, certainly the past, 100 years of their existence as a school. But, more recently, as they've been, in the 70s, they've always had their own TV broadcast. They had their own Sunday morning show. So you always got the highlight. Everybody got the highlights of Notre Dame football. It wasn't just a regional thing. It was a national thing. Every Sunday morning you got to watch it. So they've been building that national fan base here in the U.S. And so when they do a trip like that to Dublin, Ireland, it's tapping into not only their national fan base, but their global fan base. I mean, that's not only – the Irish Americans team, the Catholic team, but if you're a college football or a football fan, and you're of Irish descent, that's your football team, and they're coming over to play in Dublin. Boom. They're coming to play. They're coming to see them. I mean, you've seen it now in marketing deals where they've got the partnership with Guinness. They're playing up this Irish relationship in all kinds of ways. One, It's a great trip. Great way to kick off your season with a win against Navy. I mean, it wasn't a competitive game, for, you know, sadly, but you know, it's an awesome trip. You, as you pointed out, the power of the brand to get 40,000 people to purchase a trip that's economic impact for Dublin, for Ireland tourism in general, for Aer Lingus that flies them over, you know, all of the things that go with it, you know, the revenue that's being, you know, generated and dropped in the economy over there is massive. And it just, again, it shows the value and impact that a partnership and a relationship with college football, in this case, you know, there's lots of events that happen around, you know, the sports landscape with, sports tournaments and stuff that people travel to. But this is one where, you know, this wasn't the Final Four or the college football championship. This was a season opener overseas, and sold out stadium, massive, massive travelers coming from the U.S. in, and, you know, a big win for Notre Dame because it's another way to service their fans. A huge win for, the city of Dublin and Irish tourism as a whole. The only losers probably at some level are Navy because they were on the wrong end of the score. But I think for them and their student athletes, it was an awesome trip as well to be part of that, you know, that pageantry, and to be able to experience that, that trip and be part of that game. I'm pretty sure they'd love to have been a little bit more competitive, but overall, I think it just again shows the power of college football and the impact it can have internationally. And you know, we'll certainly talk about this weekend being the big kickoff for college football and all the games that are being played from Thursday night all the way through Monday. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely, which then pretty much leads us into week one. Some huge games are being played. Now, there's a lot of commentary about the on-field stuff, which is fine. What we're very interested in is the off-field stuff. Like, what is the commercial value that's been brought, or the commercial power that's been brought to these cities? I remember last year when the game between the final was played in LA, right? It was TCU versus, I think, Georgia.
TCU and Georgia. Yeah. So far, yeah.
Yeah. They said the economic impact was around $250 million to the city of LA, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, again, this is college football here. We're not talking about we're not talking about the pro leagues. It's ridiculous. The power of this league is enormous. Now, week one. Everyone's engaged. Everyone's fired up. Stadiums are sold out. You know, people are sitting in the car parks on their tailgates, having barbecue, sausages, whatever. It's on. The festivities are flowing everywhere.
Yeah.
What would you say, based off you working with multiple brand sponsors in the space, is the commercial impact that it has as a whole? In week one, is there a figure out there?
Well, look, this kickoff weekend, and it's one of the things that college football has done a fantastic job. They book in their season with, you know, the opening weekend is like a series of bowl games, you know, with the kickoff classic and all of the, you know, you've got marquee matchups kicking it off. No cream puff, you know, matchups in any of those. I mean, they're ranked teams playing each other out of the gate, which we'd love to see. In destination markets that are places that host championships and host Final Fours and host, conference championships or the like, much like we talked a little bit about what Dublin did. I mean, all of those places are putting up money. You know, bringing in fans, selling out 70,000 seat stadiums, putting people in beds and creating a marquee matchup to kick off the season. And then they end the season with, 41 bowl games and a national championship game that does the same thing, you know, around the country And in between every home game in a college town is an economic windfall for the marketplace, because, you know, there are some towns that become the largest city in the state when they host a home game at a football stadium, because all of a sudden there's 100,000 people that show up in addition to the 20,000 that maybe live in the market, you know. And so economically, it's a billion-dollar business this weekend if you want to add up, you know, what economic impact is going to be in Atlanta, in New Orleans, in Charlotte, you know, those are in, you know, Vegas, Utah. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, just you start peeling together all these games that are happening. It's a billion dollar weekend for college football. And that's going to, you know, you've got ESPN, you know, broadcasting games, ABC broadcasting games, Fox. I mean, you got it all. I mean, you know, everything is happening. And obviously this is the weekend before the NFL starts, you know, a week from tomorrow, you know, to kick off. So this is a week, you know, Labor Day weekend is a weekend that college football can own without having to compete with the NFL. The rest of the way they're competing with NFL starting next Thursday. And, you know, obviously the NFL takes Thursday nights, Monday nights, and Sundays. College football has moved itself around to where they're playing games on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And this weekend they can actually take Thursday through Sunday Monday as their, you know, as their Monday night game, Duke Blue Devils versus, the Clemson Tigers, you know, as a matter of fact, for the Monday night football game. But again, you get an opportunity to really showcase the product, control the airwaves. And again, college football fans have been chomping at the bit all summer, you know, going to spring games, transfers coming in, transfers going out, coaching changes, rule changes, all kinds of stuff. And then now here we are, you know, we're done with training camp. We're done with all, we're not talking conference realignment for a bit. We're just watching the games get played, and we're watching, going to watch some really, really good football this weekend. That's going to get us all fired up for, you know, the next, you know, 3 months ahead of us, and, you know, watch this all play out.
I would say this weekend would tip the 100 million viewership number for sure.
You know, like I said, you've got some real, you know, high level marquee games that are out there with big fan bases. You know, not only going to be, you know, obviously, you know, sold out in the stadiums, but alumni and fans and bettors. Let's not forget, there will be a few wagers on the games this weekend. I mean, that audience will be tuned in to college football this weekend, I certainly will be one of them. We've got our home opener here at ASU tomorrow night, so. I'll sneak out and watch the Sun Devils.
Which leads us into our next talking point is the college football broadcasting as a whole. You have the two biggest competitors in today's world in the sporting media landscape, Fox, ESPN. These two will reap the rewards of this weekend's opener. They will make a ton of money in advertising and so on and so on. The other aspect or the other component of their influence and power is that these guys are pretty much now changing the landscape, pushing teams out of different conferences, bringing conferences down to their knees, moving things over the way that suits their, you know, their best interests. So do we have a duopoly in place? What's going on?
Well, you've got, what we have, and a lot of the conference movement we've seen in college football is financially related. You know, there's, you know, we've gone over some of the numbers that are being, you know, proposed, you know, what attracted a UCLA and a USC to leave the Pac-12 and go to the Big Ten. You know, what we're, what we saw a Texas and an Oklahoma leave the Pac, the Big 12 to go to the SEC. And now, we, you know, the same thing has happened as other teams are leaving the Pac-12 to go to the Big 12. Teams that are, you know, now we've, and the ACC is now looking to, you know, potentially add a couple more teams to give themselves a West Coast feel to their Atlantic Coast Conference. So, and look, all of it's around, you know, the media dollars that are driving college football. In the past, you know, the biggest revenue generator, you know, for schools, you know, typically had been, you know, playing in the NCAA tournament and getting part of that billion-dollar pie that was out there through the NCAA tournament. And now, you know, the shift has been, and conference and teams were chasing that money through conference affiliation, et cetera. You know, now we're seeing you know, monumental movements of without geographic containment, if you will, moving into conferences, creating, you know, coast to coast national brands. And again, to your point, TV partners are like, I want the LA market. I want the New York market. I want the Chicago market. I want the DFW market. I want, you know, give me the big DMAs because that's where I can drive value and revenue and et cetera. And so it's, CBS still has a little bit of play in there, but the, you know, they're kind of falling out and, you know, putting more of their money into their NFL product now. It'll be very interesting because obviously both Fox and you know, ESPN have their, you know, Fox has got their FS1, you know, platform. So they've got their Fox, you know, they're over the air and then their cable provider or their paid provider. They've got their streaming aspects. They've all got, you know, national talking head broadcast shows around college football, both, you know, streamed, available on their network platforms and on their radio platforms. All of them, have, you know, have kind of got all the, you know, the those angles covered now, you know, with talking heads around the game. We saw the move of Pat McAfee, you know, now, you know, moving into the game day set.
That was a huge move.
A big move as well, and they'll still be the fringe players that maybe have a game, you know, maybe have a smaller league, or maybe have one or two of the bowl games at the end of the day with college football. But I think you're right. I think there are two behemoths that are kind of leading the charge and certainly writing the checks. That are dictating some movement right now. And, you know, we'll, you know, as the chess pieces have not stopped moving yet, there's still some moves to be made. I don't know that when we'll hear of any of them, or if some of them will be, you know, met at the pass because grants of rights make it too expensive for someone to leave now. But I think some of the die has been cast on a few of these conferences that are either fighting for their lives or, in the case of the Pac-12, I think have been dealt a death blow, and they're trying to figure out, is there a way to exist moving forward as a new Pac-12, or do they, you know, merge with another conference and still keep the Pac-12 name, but now you have only maybe two or three original members still involved.
So ESPN offered the Pac-12 $30 million per team, right?
They did, allegedly.
Yeah.
And there was a sports professor that told a Pac-12 president that was lowball. And I'll go on record on this podcast to say that was not me that told my president that was a lowball offer. I would have said, take that deal and run to the hills. For $30 exactly. million a year, with USC and UCLA gone, the Pac-12 would still be intact if that deal had been accepted. And for
now,
sure.
And now they're the Pac-4.
They're the Pac-4, about to be the Pac-2.
It's a small mistake. guys can make a huge, have a huge impact. And I think in the coming years, we're not going to have the Power Five. We're going to have the Power Three. And
it's, well, I think, and I even go further than that. And I talk about this in my class, and I have over the past couple of years, is that I think eventually what we're seeing college football move towards is its own league.
Yeah.
The power players, because of the investment now with NIL being prominent, that the college football game at the highest level is no longer the college football that kind of keeps conferences together and things of that nature. It's become a de facto semi-pro league, right? And for the good of the game, I'm fine with that. I mean, and you could keep conferences intact if you said, hey, football, hold on a second. You guys are, you 60 schools that, you know, the Ohio States, the USCs, the Texases, the Oklahomas, the Florida States, Alabamas of the world, you guys go play in your own league and you know, mano a mano, so that you get the matchups, you get the money, you do your own TV deal, you play your own national championship. And, you know, some people may not like this, but I would say that, you know, leave the Ivy Leagues, you know, the Conference USAs, the Vanderbilts and the Dukes of the world, are, you know, try to compete in football. But at the end of the day, you know, we're not writing checks like some of these other schools. Let them still play, you know, an NCAA, you know, conference schedule. And that the ACC is not ripped apart because they have all of a sudden tried to become a football league when they've always been a basketball league. And the one thing that's really lost in these things is the Olympic sports, the non-ref sports, that all of a sudden you've got student athletes, you've got a female softball players at UCLA that are now going to play Rutgers and vice versa. Instead of it being a, you know, what was more region, you know, and guess what? Those sports can't afford that travel. You know, so now they have to do pod travel. And you see in some cases that we're seeing some sports dropped, you know, that like, hey, sports like lacrosse, you know, that are playing the West Coast, all of a sudden, you know, USC and UCLA are now playing all these East Coast teams, and they don't have the money to spend to make those trips. And so they either drop the sport or they stay in a much more regional league to play, and they're not part of the Big Ten or the Pac-12.
Softball's got huge potential. Last year, they were pulling in viewership higher than the NBA Finals.
Yeah, well, you had a historic team on a run that had won 55 in a row or whatever. On occasion, yes. But yeah. Oklahoma is a school that invests heavily. And oh, by the way, the national championships are played in Oklahoma City. So, you know, at the end of just like, you know, the men's college World Series is played in Omaha. That's a, you know, not a, if Nebraska got to that, it's a, you know, it's a 50-minute drive down the road. Same thing for, you know, the Lady Sooners that won it this year. But, you know, again, just, you know, what makes, you know, college sports great are these rivalries and these regional matchups, and the facts that the teams can are close enough, you know, to where travel's not, you know, a prohibitive part of it. Families can go see their kids play at schools, you know, and yes, it's nice every once in a while to go, hey, we're playing, USC is flying out to play Penn State. That's cool. That's cool. You know, you do a home and home like that. But now that's a conference game, you know, that's a conference game. And you think about student athletes, especially, you know, in the, you know, football's is once a week. You know, there are other sports that are playing two games a week at least. And you know, your men's basketball team, women's basketball team, SC is going to fly out and play Rutgers, Syracuse, and Boston College or something, wow. You know, and they'll be out of school for 3 weeks. You know, and so at the end of the day, some of these geographic decisions for, you know, made with football in mind you know, how they affect, you know, down the road to the student athletes that are playing some of these other sports. And look, the school's doing it, you know, for money, and maybe they say we can afford to now fly them there. Are you buying them a jet? I don't know. But, you know, some schools might. Some schools may invest in that. Some schools have the booster to do that. Some don't. But, you know, just, you know, you look at the, you know, who's paying the price? The student athletes are the ones that are sacrificing their college experience to, you know, to now, you know, have you make a little bit more money on your football program.
So, which is a perfect segue into our next topic. Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh calls for more revenue sharing with players. Like, it couldn't have happened any better than the way you just, you know, you just did it. Because 100%, it's time. It's time now that these athletes are being paid more, are being paid. Look, it's, don't tell me it's amateur. No amateur league in the world has broadcasting rights of a compilation of 30-something billion dollars. It's just... it's a professional league. It is what it is, right? It's time to give these athletes more. It just doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah, well, college sports has always been a business. It was a business that was built on the backs of amateur athletes playing a sport, selling tickets, selling sponsorships, selling broadcast rights, and there was a point there where you still believed it was, you know, amateur athletics. Scholarships were a form of payment that was agreed upon and understood. And then now we got brown bags and $100 handshakes and all that stuff. And now we've got NIL, right? And I've always been a big proponent, you know, at a minimum, you know, that athletes, because I always laughed when we lived in Los Angeles and you bought an 11 jersey, a 3 jersey, or a 5 jersey. And it didn't have, you know, it was somehow the reason you were buying that jersey is because it was just your favorite number. No, you were buying it because it was Reggie Bush or Matt Leinart or Carson Palmer or whatever. And there's other schools that, you know, have their iconic number. And there are athletes that were associated with the 45 at Ohio State, or, you know, the 22, you know, the 21 at Michigan or whatever. So I've always thought that, you know, things as simple as jersey sales, you know, while an athlete was playing at your school, should be a revenue share. And you know, Michigan does that as part of, you know, their deal with all of their student athletes, and jerseys that are sold at the, you know, the Michigan bookstore, that if you buy, you know, your son plays soccer and you buy a, you know, number 2 soccer jersey, then the kid wearing that jersey gets a percentage of the sales, you know, for that. And that's always easy to do. You know, because you could never put your name on the back of it at schools that always had names on the back of it. But now you can. You can do that now, and you can do that through NIL deals and the like. But I think what Jim is talking about is not NIL deals, not just a collective deal, but hey, University of Michigan, you are making, you're getting a check every week from the Big Ten for your piece of this pie. And the ticket sales from all athletics of X a month, hey, we've got 335, you know, student athletes that make up our men's and women's athletic programs. Let's cut checks for all 335 of them equal. Boom. You know,
$1,000 a week.
Yeah, $1,000 a week. I mean, shit.
What's,
you know,
that?
Dude,
it's,
yeah,
nothing.
You know, there is something that, makes them, you know, because at the end of the day, they are the talent that are on the field playing the games with which you are, you know, generating revenue. It makes sense. You know, it doesn't make anybody rich as a college athlete, but, you know, look, you know, I've got a couple, I've had 2 sons that were college athletes, and $1,000 a month, you know, just during season would have been nice, you know, or a week or whatever it is. I mean, you know, obviously it's, you know, it would be a nice gesture. And for me, it would be nice to go towards their tuition, but, you know, at some level, it just shows that there is an appreciation for the talent, respect for that talent. And if you're not going to make them employees, find other ways to compensate them. You know, because I don't think they want unions. I don't think they want them as employees. I still think they want to kind of keep the separation of your student athletes. And, you know, again, it's an oxymoron in all kinds of ways. But I would say that I think there's lots of schools that would endorse it. But I think there are also some schools that probably couldn't afford to do it, sadly. So I would like to see the onus put on the conferences, not the schools, because there are some schools that don't generate the same type of revenue, but the conferences are. And so kind of create something that's a hybrid.
Well, it doesn't have to be every school. It's the school that can facilitate this service, but they can go ahead and do it. What's stopping them? It can be a selling point.
Yeah, no, well, and therein lies the other concern from the NCAA standpoint, is that now it becomes an advantage for a school that has the revenue and the capability to, quote, pay their athletes, you know, a monthly stipend or a weekly stipend, and a school that could say, I can offer you a scholarship and a per diem.
That's capitalism, my friend. Work harder and build your school and make your school the greatest school on earth. There's no room for being complacent in the world. Competition is great.
I don't disagree, but in you know, I'll put on my college hat just for the moment of trying to say, you know, at some level, I don't disagree that there should be some sort of level of compensation. I think that if they can adopt it to where it's not as much of an advantage, because I think at the end of the day, look, a kid's going to go to Ohio State over Georgetown for a reason, you know, and money's not always the reason. But exactly. I would think that at some level, you want to keep the level of competition fair. But again, if you're in a Power Five school, you know, you got to play ball, you know,
exactly.
you got to step up your game. We're seeing that now with the creation of collectives, even to the point that now that we're seeing them in Division III schools.
Absolutely.
So everybody's finding a way to get into the action and play and allow their alumni to participate and help their alma maters grow. It'll certainly be something fun to watch and track. You know, when you get a guy like Jim Harbaugh, who's a prominent Power Five coach has coached at Division III, coached at a small Division I, and then coached professionally, and now is obviously back at his alma mater, doing great things at Michigan. You know, he's someone that kind of has seen the gamut of this a little bit and can speak, I think fairly intelligently. And at some level, his commentary will carry, great weight, you know, in a debate that will probably rage on for the entire season. Now that he's opened up that conversation.
Absolutely. All right. Let's wait it out and see. Hopefully we have a huge year ahead of us. Some great results. I'm sure there'll be some upsets that'll put some schools on the map like we had last year. And we'll pretty much wrap it up here. Once again, thank you very much, Rob. Always great to chat. Lots to talk about every week. And it's no different this week.
Absolutely, and look, like you said, we've got an exciting weekend of college sports ahead of us. We've got the U.S. Open tennis just kicking up. We've got all the excitement up there at Flushing Meadow and in New York. So we've got a fun weekend ahead for sure. NFL will be something that will be on the cusp when you and I circle back next week. So certainly looking forward to catching up with you, my friend. Hopefully you have a great weekend yourself. I'm looking forward, like I said, going to the Arizona State game tomorrow night and seeing what the Sun Devils have got with 50 new players and a new head coach who's a good friend. And just like I said, excited for the pageantry to hit the gridiron this weekend.
All right, everyone. Thank you very much. Take care. We'll catch you all next week. Goodbye.
Forks up.